Welcome everyone to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I am so grateful that you all are here and that we are joining for this hour to strengthen these loving ideas in our minds. So we will be reading, if you want to get your pages ready, in the Manual for Teachers, we're looking at part two, who are their pupils? We read part one, who are God's teachers, last week. We also read the first two paragraphs of this section, but I'm going to just reread them. So, we ready? Here we go. Oh, I'm sorry. There's one setting I just need to change really quick. And I'm just going to mute everybody too. Okay. Let's settle in for a few moments of joining in silence in a brief meditation. Beginning by just taking a nice deep breath in and out. Again, if you'd like, deep breath in and out. Perhaps a third time, really trying to slow down that inhale and exhale. As always, finding your willingness, however small, and offering that willingness to Holy Spirit. Knowing that whatever we give, there's always an exchange, never a loss. In that exchange, we receive a new perception, maybe a feeling of love, or just a deep sense of connection to our source. This holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And so right now, this instant, every instant, we place the Holy Spirit in charge. Taking a nice deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of this moment in time. Again, welcome everyone. So good to be here. We are reading The Manual for Teachers, Part 2, Who Are Their Pupils? So whichever edition you are reading from, please make your way there. Last week, we actually read the first two paragraphs of this section, so I will just reread those just so we are remembering what it was saying before we move on. All right. Who are their pupils? Who are the teacher of God's pupils? Certain pupils have been assigned to each of God's teachers, and they will begin to look for him as soon as he has answered the call. They were chosen for him because the form of the universal curriculum that he will teach is best for them in view of their level of understanding. His pupils have actually been waiting for him, for his coming is certain. Again, it is only a matter of time. Once he has chosen to fulfill his role, they are ready to fulfill theirs. Time waits on his choice, but not whom he will serve. When he is ready to learn, the opportunities to teach will be provided for him. In order to understand the teaching-learning plan of salvation, it is necessary to grasp the concept of time which the course sets forth. Atonement corrects illusions, not the truth. Therefore, it corrects what never was. Further, the plan for this correction was established and completed simultaneously, for the will of God is entirely apart from time. So is all reality being of him. The instant the idea of separation entered the mind of God's Son, in that same instant was God's answer given. That's the Holy Spirit. In time, this happened very long ago. In reality, it never happened at all. And since we discussed that last week, those paragraphs, I'm going to read paragraph 3. The world of time is the world of illusion. What happened long ago seems to be happening now. Choices made long since appear to be quite open, yet to be made. What has been learned and understood and long ago passed by is looked upon as a new thought, a fresh idea, a different approach. Because your will is free, you can accept what has already happened at any time you choose. And only then will you realize that it was always there. As the course emphasizes, you are not free to choose the curriculum or even the form in which you will learn it. You are free, however, to decide when you want to learn it. And as you accept it, it is already learned. And there we shall pause. So we're continuing with this idea in the second paragraph that we read. The moment we had this tiny mad idea of separation was the moment that the answer was given. In time, this happened very long ago. In reality, it never happened at all. So this was all, as I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, but we talked about how this is all done and over, and we're mentally reviewing that which has passed by already. And this, to me, is kind of mind-blowing. Choices made long since appear to be open. So in other words, what we dreamt that was long ago has been resolved. And yet because we are hanging on to this idea of separation, what seems like a fresh idea or a new thought is actually, that's actually all been done already. So this is the sentence that gets me the most. It's in the middle of paragraph 3. Because your will is free, you can accept what has already happened at any time you choose. And only then will you realize that it was always there. So in other words, it's not like we're remembering truth for the first time. When we have those moments of just knowing, as fear falls away, this isn't something new that's happened. This was over and done with long ago. And so all we're doing really in our quote unquote healing process is accepting that which we've already accepted. We've you know, again, sort of dissociated from the truth, which was healed. We're not bodies. We're not actually here. We certainly perceive ourselves to be, and it feels very, very real, but we can accept what has already happened at any time we choose. Only then will we realize that it was always there. So it's, again, it reminds me of how the Course says this is a journey without distance to a goal that has never changed. It's not that there's this long, drawn out path of lessons that are brand new. This has been all over and done with. And our recognition of the truth is recognizing that we've already made the choice for God. So that to me is kind of mind-blowing. I'm going to pause and I want to see, does anybody have any comments or questions so far about anything related to these first three paragraphs? All good? Mary Beth.
Even last week, this sentence from the first paragraph got to me. And once again, I just love this, that they were chosen for him. So the pupils were chosen for God's teacher, because the form of the universal curriculum that he will teach is best for them in view of their level of understanding. His pupils have been waiting for him, for his coming is certain. Only a matter of time. Once he has chosen to fulfill his role, they are ready to fulfill theirs. And just the thought that everyone I meet who comes into my life has been chosen to be there for me to teach once I choose to become a teacher of God, you know, and then that what was just read in the last paragraph about choices made long ago seem new upon my acceptance of the idea. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like this, I just love that idea of it was all chosen way before, like I said, although there is no time, but it all seems new and I just have to choose and it's fulfilled, sort of. It was just beautiful.
Thanks. I'm right there with you. It is absolutely beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. Thank you for your beautiful words. I am struck by those lines too. Cheryl, I see your hand.
A little bit confused. So I don't know if I'm thinking too hard or I just don't get it, but so does that mean like everything already happened in a certain way and the way that it happened, I already reached God, but I can still choose a different way?
You can still, I know it's like kind of a little trippy. I think of it this way. All of this, like this long stretch of time, we thought of it and it was fixed like this. It was literally, because again, eternity and time are completely different. And I can't wrap my mind around what eternity is, but I think of it as literally we had the thought and it was over and done. But in that tiny like moment, which again, I even recognize in that, like saying that there was a moment in eternity is probably, I don't know, that's still probably putting a little time into eternity. It was that quick where it was like idea of separation healed and done. So the way that I think about it is that I can dissociate from that part of my mind that is home, that has never left God, that knows perfect oneness. And that's not a body. That's not this level of form, you know, that's on a formless level. And I can dissociate that I am or did, because otherwise I wouldn't be, you know, perceiving myself to be Corinne in a body and here. So I don't know if that helps at all, but
Not at all. And that's okay. That's okay. It's not really it's not really understandable.
Because the thing that I wanted to get clear is, if it's already happened and it's already done, you know, I'm already back with God, even though I never left. But what about me choosing different things along the way, or anybody else choosing different things? Like when somebody chooses to do something either good or bad, mm-hmm. you know, like, what does that mean? Let me just throw this in, because I remember Jesus saying that we save ourselves like thousands of years. So where does all of that come into play? Because I want to make the right choices, but I want to know that my choices matter. So I'm getting a little confused.
Well, I guess the question would be like, who is wanting to know that the choices matter? Like, you know, like I just think about how I can get too worried or concerned about, like, is this the right choice or is that the right choice? I want to back up though and kind of, this might not help, but I always think of that onion and the layers of the onion. So if I've dissociated from what's already done, I've done so by piling on layers and layers of fear So each choice I'm making is either keeping a layer of fear intact, or it's a choice if I'm choosing with the Holy Spirit, which the moment we've made the choice that there's got to be another way is the moment we let the Holy Spirit in, which is now like the end is guaranteed. So it's almost like you don't have to worry. We do have to tune in and ask for guidance. But this is where I sort of try to not worry about, like, is it like, should I do this or should I do that? I've handed it all over to the Holy Spirit. So if I do have to make a choice, what feels best in that moment, and if it's a quote-unquote good choice, hopefully that's contributing to allowing a fearful layer to fall away. If it's a not great choice, it's all my learning, you know, it's all my training ground, my learning. So whether we choose good or bad, we've already made the choice for the Holy Spirit. And so it's all going to be used on behalf of our awakening. So we can't get it wrong.
What about the 1,000 years?
That's that collapsing it. So that's that idea of the collapsing of time, where if we're blocking out collectively, even truth, when we allow those miracle impulses to come up through us and be expressed as Jesus directs, as the Holy Spirit directs, that awakens something in us and others that brings our collective awareness of eternity a little closer. That's the best way that I can put it in terms of like that collapsing of time. So the saving of years happens each time we're turning to the Holy Spirit, each time we're making that decision with the Holy Spirit, each time we're allowing those expressions of love to come through us. Because it says, I think I referenced this last week. This is just a thought that just popped up, that just as the separation occurred over millions of years, the last judgment, which is, you know, the sort of ending of the dream, which is not a bad thing. The last judgment has a, you know, Catholic, Christian, traditional connotation to it, but it's actually God judging everything as good and seeing only the truth. We're, again, just speeding that up with bringing the collective awareness of eternity closer for everyone. So I don't know if that helps, Cheryl.
Thank you.
I tried.
Thank you.
Thank you. I see a bunch of hands, actually. I saw Christine, then Sandy, then Pam. Hi, Christine.
This has kind of been talked about over and over again, but this this idea of time, this idea that everything is happening at once, it's just, I know quantum physics, I know it's supposed to be, but I just have a hard time believing it or making it hit home for me. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I know that this is supposed to be all happening at once, and I know sometimes time seems forever, mm-hmm. and then sometimes it seems to go by so fast. I just have a hard time, I guess, believing that my future, my past, everything is happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Christine. Thank you so much. I think it's good that you have that, like, the Course says we don't have to believe anything it says. We just have to, like, practice it, like, just practice the ideas and see what the results are. So I think it can easily be an ego diversion into the intellect to try to really figure some of this stuff out. You know, like when we're trying, I did a video blog a long time ago about how we are like two-dimensional worms with A Course in Miracles. It was based on a book. I never read the whole book because I just didn't. It was called Hyperspace by Michio Kaku, a physicist. And the little bits of the book that I did read, he gave such a helpful example. He described a piece of paper, which you can see that I'm holding, and he stuck a pencil through it. And if you imagine that, if we stick the pencil through the paper, there is if you're a creature that exists in this plane of paper, and that's us, if we only exist in this plane of paper, when a pencil gets stuck through it, all we're going to see is a tiny slice of this thing coming through this piece of paper, this sliver of a pencil coming through this piece of paper. That's all our brains we can't conceptualize. Like we can have those moments of experience of eternity, the experience maybe of sensing that all this is happening at once. But I think it can be, I know for myself, it can be like an ego slippery slope, because I want to try to start figuring it out. So I rest with knowing that I am a two-dimensional worm. I can only understand this little sliver of this, you know, this pencil through this paper, and the bigger part of it, the whole pencil, I can't, I can have glimpses and I can have experiences, but rather than trying to wrap my mind around it, let me focus on tuning into the Holy Spirit. Let me focus on guidance and on miracle working, and where am I called to be? You know, who am I called to speak to? Who am I going to bump into today? We talked about those beautiful stories. Steve shared one last week about, you know, having just an encounter, an unplanned encounter with a stranger. So thank you, Christine.
So in a sense, it's my ego trying to
could be
kind of poo-poo. Uh-huh.
Could be. And I mean, it's okay to do that. I have said this many times, and Carol and Pat would remember this. We had a gentleman in our in-person study group years ago. His name was Bill. And he'd grab his course book from time to time, and he'd hurl it across the room, not in our study group, but at home. He'd hurl it across the room and he'd say, "It's all lies." Like, you know, just had enough of it. And then of course he'd pick it back up again. So whatever we wrestle with in the course, it doesn't matter. The important thing is that we're listening to the Holy Spirit, that we're tuning in to the Holy Spirit. To me is, I mean, the whole course wouldn't be the course without the Holy Spirit. So as long as we're focusing on the Holy Spirit, we don't have to worry about the rest. And we can ask the Holy Spirit for help. This is the thing. Anything that I share is through Corinne's filter. I can get out of the way from time to time, but anything, whenever we ask another person to interpret the course for us, or, you know, whatever it may be, it's always coming through some type of filter. And so one of the best things we can do is, if we don't understand something in the course, we can ask the Holy Spirit to show us, you know, "Holy Spirit, give me an example. Can you help me with this idea. I've done that so many times, and either the answer comes, or you might have an experience in your life where you're like, oh, wait a second, I just, you know, read something about this. So it's totally fine to not get things, to disagree with them, to want to figure it out. But at the end of the day, it's all about centering the Holy Spirit and learning with the Holy Spirit. So thank you, Christine. Great question. Great comments. Fanny.
Hi.
Hi.
My English is not so good, so bear with me. Yeah, okay.
Your English is wonderful.
Okay. So one of my miracle buddy, I mean in Malaysia, I told her that I started the lesson at lesson 30 because in February I saw people doing the Course in Miracles videos. On February is on lesson 30 already, so I just follow it. Then I share with her that I start from the lesson 30. So she keep emphasizing to me that it's better for you to start from lesson 1. I said it's okay. It's a form doesn't matter. It's most important is about the content, right? I want to do forgiveness. Doesn't matter I start from 30 because I like to follow them so that I have the daily motivation to follow the video and they are sharing and giving comment. So she told me like 2-3 times every few weeks, say I should start from lesson 1. I feel irritated. I say, why are you so focused on the form? So just like want to get your opinion whether is it okay? Lesson 30.
Yeah. Even you say,
yeah.
Great question. Oh, great question. Thank you, Fanny. Yeah, thank you. Was there another time when you did lessons 1 through 29?
Yep, I've done a few times already. The lesson I up to is 100 lesson only. Like few times I already start. I say I already done that before, like few times back. I already start from lesson 1 to 30 for many, many times. So now I still start from 30. It doesn't matter. She say, I just feel like something is not right. She keep telling me, I say, why? I just feel irritated, you know. I mean, yes, to her, I'm fine. She said, okay, then tell me again.
I trust your guidance. Please trust your guidance. If that motivation is there, like if you came across the video lessons when they were, you know, at lesson 30, the important point is that you have done 1 through 29 at some point. So it's not like you're just jumping in and you skip those. I think it's absolutely, absolutely perfect to do what you're doing. And you have to follow your guidance. That's what this is all about. True. Somebody else's opinion.
Why she keep telling me. Okay.
Thank you, Fanny. Yeah, thank you so much for the question. I appreciate it. Pam.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what the person before, Christine, maybe said. They say both 1,000 years and everything happening right now. It's kind of hard to wrap my mind around that. But when we think of form, that's time. Uh-huh. But my question is, we're not free to choose the curriculum or even the form in which we will learn it. So we're in Course in Miracles. This is a question. We're doing Course in Miracles and this is our form. And it was already decided that we would choose this form.
Yep.
Because I've done up until the course, I've done a smorgasbord approach to spirituality. Mm-hmm. And then I found the course. And so everything is now the course. So that to me is mind-boggling that this is way beyond, well, Jesus is writing these words, but this is way beyond Jesus. This is like a higher, way higher.
Right. Something. Yeah. Yes. Jesus awakened from the dream. And so this is, he's our elder brother, as the course says, and it, you know, is a guide and is with us, gave us the course. But you're absolutely right that there's a lot, you know.
So what his form was also chosen for him.
Yes. He said in the, it says in the course, he said, I elected, oh, what were the exact words? He was speaking about having elected to demonstrate a very extreme example, which, you know, was the crucifixion. So that was something that always stood out to me, that, you know, he clearly states that was a choice, I guess, you know, that he made to demonstrate and to totally, you know, recognize that he was not a body, to actually overcome the belief in death, you know, through what he demonstrated. So,
but it says that we're not free to choose the form, that it's already chosen for us.
That's the mind-boggling thing, is that it's you're not free to choose the curriculum or even the form in which you will learn it. So I see that as like, okay, A Course in Miracles spoke to me because of something, some greater choice that I or something, you know, decided somewhere. And the form in which I learn, if you think about it, if we're mentally reviewing what's already been done, it's as if like the form was chosen and then, you know, healed the instant we, again, thought it, and then it was healed. So the form has been chosen and healed already too, which is why I would think, you know, that's why we're not free to necessarily choose the form, although it sure seems like we can. So yeah, it's that mind-boggling. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Whole. Thank you, Pam. Thank you for these great questions. Oh, all right. Anybody else before we move on? Andrea.
Well, to that question, to what I think what Pam was sharing, the way I sort of think about it for myself, although it is really hurts my brain if I get too into it, but the I feel like with the little s self, I am not free to choose the curriculum or the form. Like the big s self already chose that, and that's the path I'm going on, and that's why in my case the course is attractive to me. Mm-hmm. Buddhism or Taoism or Sikhism aren't the path that that I've been attracted to, mm-hmm. even though those are other courses for other teachers. Mm-hmm. And I also sort of think of it like me, for me personally, I feel like on some level, my soul chose my parents that I was born to, mm-hmm. and the family that I was born to for the certain kind of life that my soul wanted to participate in. Mm-hmm. So I'm not free to choose my parents on the little s self. Uh-huh. That's already done.
Uh-huh.
But I was free to, well, anyways, I guess I was free to choose it with the soul, but.
You're getting thumbs up. Yeah, no, that's well said. I love that you're making the distinction between the small self and the capital self. That's really helpful. It's really helpful to make that distinction. There's a post in the chat too from Eric. Thank you for this. We can never choose the form, only the teacher we choose, God or the ego. Whatever teacher we choose decides the experience. So that's super helpful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Great comments. Okay. So we're on paragraph 4, I think. Let's read another paragraph. Time really then goes backward to an instant so ancient that it is beyond all memory and past even the possibility of remembering. Yet because it is an instant that is relived again and again and still again, it seems to be now. And thus it is that pupil and teacher seem to come together in the present, finding each other as if they had not met before. The pupil comes at the right time to the right place. This is inevitable because he made the right choice in that ancient instant, which he now relives. This is more mind-boggling stuff. So has the teacher, too, made an inevitable choice out of an ancient past. God's will in everything, but seems
to take time in the working out? What could delay the power of eternity? You know, I glanced down and I'm reading from the purple book, the CE edition. And this is a footnote that was from the prior paragraph that we read, but I just feel moved to share it. I'll read it. It came at the very end of the prior paragraph after the sentence, "As you accepted it, it is already learned." This footnote says, "Because we are reliving a journey through time that is already over, everything we learned in that journey, even learning that seems at this point to lie in the future, has already been learned by us. In studying A Course in Miracles, then, we are not actually learning something new. We are merely accepting learning that we acquired long ago." More, I don't even know what to call them. I want to call them trippy ideas. That's the only word that's coming to mind at the moment. I take a lot of comfort in it, even though I don't get it, how it totally works. I just take a lot of comfort that this is already over. We're already home. Success is guaranteed. It's like that quote, "Those who are certain of the outcome can afford to wait and wait without anxiety." I wouldn't say that my trust still wavers, but feeling certain of the outcome, hearing this idea, you know, again and again, to me is very comforting. Any comments or questions about this paragraph? It makes me think about our discussion when Steve and I shared stories last week about meeting with strangers. Sentence number 3 says, "And thus it is that pupil and teacher seem to come together in the present, finding each other as if they had not met before." It makes me feel like the recognition that I just felt with this quote unquote chance encounter, which I had in the L.L. Bean store with the salesman, there just was a mutual recognition there that is unexplainable on the level of form. But in our brief conversation, I remember just feeling like my heart was lit up and open. And it just makes me think of this line: "We seem to come together in the present, finding each other as if we had not met before." It also makes me wonder about past lives, which in the context of what we're talking about, again, oh goodness, that's a whole other can of worms, isn't it? Maybe I'll stop there. still part of the dream, still the same thing, but I think it's like, yeah, don't know how that works. Makes me wonder about alternate realities and that sort of thing. Like they're all happening simultaneously. Anyway, can of worms. Any comments or questions before we move on? Steve, hi.
Just a quick share. Years and years and years ago, long before I ever picked up the course, somewhere along I had realized that we're born into this planet knowing everything, and we spend the rest of our lives trying to remember, trying to figure it back out. Mm. And then, you know, 20, 30 years later, I pick up the course, and it just runs really parallel with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted to share that because it just kind of fit right in.
Steve, oh, go on.
Oh, go. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to share that you reminded me of a story that I remember hearing a long time ago. My mom used to read Reader's Digest, and I'm pretty sure she told me this. It was like probably back in the 80s. A mom overheard, there were two young children in the baby's room. And the older child was saying to the baby, "Can you like tell me how God feels? I'm beginning to forget." And what you just said reminds me of that we come in, you know, with that sense of connection and
sort of that knowing. And I hear a lot of spiritual people say that they had such a connection and such a sense when they were young, but then forgot it because of, you know, learning the ways of the world. So I resonate with what you say.
And as far as this whole thing with time, linear time and everything happening all at once, I just, you know, like you mentioned earlier, you know, I just can't wrap my head around it. Mm-hmm. So I don't bother with it. You know, mm-hmm. It's just that acceptance, you know, and the faith that we got to have. So,
yeah,
I'm a pretty simple guy. I like to not, you know, boggle my mind down because I recognize that, yeah, it is the ego just trying to confuse. And when there's confusion, that's when the ego is just, you know, running rampant. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Try to yeah. step back. But I'd rather just open to that experience, right? Open to having an experience and let the experience be the teacher, because with the experience being the teacher, that's where the knowing and the understanding comes in. That's when we get, again, glimpses and so for me, I'm right there with you with the experience. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
Cheryl, I see your hand.
So I'm going to be brave and share something because you were talking about the story from the Reader's Digest.
Uh-huh.
So when I was little, and I'm talking about like really little, like 3 or 4 years old, and nobody ever told me the story before. Well, I was a very like emotional child, and I was crying one time when it was raining and stuff outside, and I was just looking outside, and my mom came over and was like, "What's wrong? Why are you crying?" And I said, "Because I'm worried about the people." And she said, "Well, what people?" And I said, "God might make it rain again, and they're going to drown." And she said, "What are you talking about?" Because she had never told me about anything about Noah's Ark or anything like that. I was just too tiny for her to tell me something like that because she didn't want to traumatize me about it. But I was telling her this, but I didn't call it Noah's Ark. I didn't know anything except for I told her that I was worried about the people. And she said, "No, nothing's going to happen like that." And I said, "Well, they don't understand that they're hurting themselves, that the people are being bad and they're hurting themselves doing
that." Wow.
And that's just one story of all the trippy things my mom had to hear coming out of my mouth when I was little.
Oh, Cheryl, thank you for being brave and sharing that, because
you notice I wasn't brave enough to do it on camera.
It's okay. It's okay. I'm just so glad that you shared it, because it's when I hear stories like that, I mean, I totally understand and respect how it feels scary. And at the same time, I benefit so much from hearing, and I'm sure others on the call, I see a lot of people nodding in agreement that we all, you know, benefit from hearing stories like that. I was getting goosebumps up and down when you were speaking. I immediately knew you were talking about, Noah's Ark.
I think everybody has experiences like that when they were little, mm-hmm. but oddly, I have memory of even being a baby. And I think that most adults, I mean, I even have friends that remember being a baby also, but mm-hmm. most adults, I think, don't remember those details once mm-hmm. they get older. And so I don't think that it was rare that I had that experience and that connection with God, but the fact that I remember it and I can talk about it later is what usually makes people go, "Oh, whoa."
So you can still remember it now. This isn't just you remembering the story through your mom.
I still remember it. Yeah. I don't even know if my mom remembers it, but I remember because I remember things from when I was a baby in a high chair.
Wow. Oh, Cheryl. That's profound and beautiful. And I'm so grateful to you for being brave and sharing it with us. Thank you. And I know I've shared this before, but I just have to say this again, that series on Netflix called Surviving Death. I'm pretty sure someone on this call recommended it to me at some point, and we finally watched it a while ago. And there is the, I think it's the last episode on the past lives, and they feature children who remember in this extraordinary detail certain facts from a previous life that they fact check and verify. It's absolutely just breathtaking to witness. So I'm to your point, Cheryl, too, that, you know, maybe if your experience isn't rare, it's just that, you know, we forget them, or maybe if kids say something, parents just dismiss it as like their imagination, and, you know, so it's just interesting to think about how common it could be when it seems so uncommon. So thank you. Wow. Oh, wonderful. I'm seeing just a couple of comments in the chat. Thank you all. You and another person, Cheryl, is just saying that they can remember being a baby too. That's cool. Anybody else have a comment? We have one paragraph left. Shall we do it? Let's do it. Okay. So the last paragraph in this section. When pupil and teacher come together, a teaching learning situation begins. For the teacher is not really the one who does the teaching. God's teacher, capital T, the Holy Spirit, speaks to any two who join for learning purposes. The relationship is holy because of that purpose. And God has promised to send his Spirit into any holy relationship. In the teaching learning situation, each one learns that giving and receiving are the same. The demarcations they have drawn between their roles, their minds, their bodies, their needs, their interests, and all the differences they thought separated them from one another fade and grow dim and disappear. Those who would learn the same course share one interest and one goal. And thus, he who was the learner becomes a teacher of God himself, for he has made the one decision that gave his teacher to him. He has seen in another person the same interests as his own. It almost sounds like the Holy Spirit, it says the Holy Spirit speaks to any two who join for learning purposes. And again, that whole, that instant where when a person sees in another the same interest as his own, it's almost as if like the pupil becomes a teacher instantaneously by that joining, by that choice. And I think that is what we read in the first section. The teacher of God is anyone who chooses to be one. Somehow he made a deliberate choice in which he did not see his interests apart from someone else's. So that concludes section two. Yes, you got it. It was called Surviving Death. Awesome. So any comments or questions about this final paragraph here? I love how it says too, this is so important. It says, I read this, I highlighted this already, but I'll highlight this again. God's teacher speaks to any two who join for learning purposes. So notice it says God's teacher, which is the Holy Spirit, speaks to any two who join for learning purposes. It does not say that the Holy Spirit speaks only to the teacher. Mm-mm. It speaks to any two who join for learning purposes. The Holy Spirit obviously speaks through both. So, comments or questions? You know, in footnote,
I have one. I'm sorry.
Oh, go for it. No, go for it, Mary Beth.
Well, first of all, it reminded me of today's lesson. What I give is given me. And, you know, going to this as a teacher of God, and I have a pupil, and now the pupil's the teacher of God, and all this. So it all comes back, and we're all one. But then when you just read that sentence, God's teacher speaks to any two who join together for learning purposes. And then it talks about the relationship is holy, and I'm thinking holy relationship as well. But is it only when two come together for those two purposes? What about a group like this or three?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Any two, I'd say two or more.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it was just this any two. And it seems, it seems I've heard people interpret the holy relationship as being just between two people, and especially like two people in an intimate relationship, but it's any interaction with another body.
Where you're losing sight of separate interests. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I absolutely think that it can be more than one. I mean, look at how much I feel like, you know, we all benefit from hearing one another share on these calls. I had a second thought that was slipping my mind at the moment, but yes, thank you for that, Mary Beth. Oh, I wish my thought would come back, but I guess I wasn't supposed to say it.
Corinne? Anyone?
Yes.
I've been noticing something in myself, and it's especially pertinent to being the teacher and the pupil and two or more are gathered. Like part of the other part of today's lesson is the review on In the Quiet, I Hear God's Wisdom. And I've always really struggled with that one, like trying to get quiet and trying to hear what God is sharing with me. And a couple of days ago, I tried something different. It was almost like I went out for a walk and I was trying to work through it, work through the lesson of the day, but doing it verbally as if I was teaching it to someone else, kind of, even though I was only talking to myself. Mm-hmm. But sort of by kind of teaching it to myself, I felt like I was channeling the Holy Spirit in a way, like kind of being both the teacher and the pupil at the same time. And then really kind of getting the flow of the wisdom coming through me. And it felt more like the Holy Spirit communicating rather than something like ego, because it was very much about oneness and the call for love and the extending love, extending forgiveness, coming to the realization that no harm was ever done, you know, all these principles. So it's sort of like hearing this distinction between the pupils and the teachers, and that the Holy Spirit speaks to both. So neither the teacher nor the pupil is the one actually doing it. It's the Holy Spirit speaking to both.
Right, right.
So, and just kind of getting into that cycle, the human Andrea feels like I'm by myself at that moment, because I'm not, because everything's all connected.
Right, right. Oh, that's beautiful, Andrea. You brought a few thoughts to mind just about how, you know, what we tend to do as people is elevate some, you know, that seem to be more special in a more of a teacher role or guru role. And this is so clearly saying, and I love that you highlighted that sentence again, that God's teacher, the Holy Spirit, speaks to any two. It's both of them. And so that's just one thing that came up as you were sharing. The other thing, and I love how you were just saying it verbally to yourself, I found a lot of helpfulness in talking to myself, in doing things like that. Like when you're saying it out loud, it just comes in differently for some reason for me. And so I love that you're doing that. I also wanted to say, when you were speaking to the review lesson in the quiet, I hear God's wisdom, when you said that statement, and you spoke about, like, you know, the difficulty that we all have experienced in trying to get quiet to listen, I've found in my own experience that if I can have the experience where I do get quiet and I do get a sense of something, but that quiet through which I hear God's wisdom can often be while my body is busy doing something. So it's like there can still be that those quiet moments of softness in the mind, of recognition in the mind, even if it seems like we're not sitting still and like, quote unquote, doing the meditation the right way. So you just made me think of that. So I just thought I'd share. Thank you for that, Andrea. Dave.
What you just said there, I know really applies to me because it's like I have to give my ego something to do, to occupy itself. So once it's busy, then like the gates are open or something, so the light can come through. Because I'm not focused on whether I'm relaxed or whether I'm not. It's just and making a big deal about that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm glad that resonates for you too, Dave. So yeah. You're absolutely right. When we give the ego something to do, that's like when I'm listening to the course or anything in the car, it's like my ego's busy driving. So then it just goes in, you know, it goes in very easily. And so that's my experience also.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. You know, I did remember something when Mary, I think it was Mary Beth, when you were sharing that when I lost my train of thought, it did come back. You asked about the holy relationship being two, and can it be more? The reason, well, I don't know about the reason, but the point that I wanted to make is that there have been, I guess, teachers who have talked about like how you just have to have a holy relationship with Jesus and that's enough. But then other teachers, like I'm thinking, you know, Sanchez specifically, has been vocal, and especially her whole second book is, her book is like this thick, and it's all about the holy relationship and how it does take two. And I think, or more. And I think that's what makes, again, the course unique, is that it's not just about doing this alone of yourself. It's that the healing that happens through our relationships, maybe drop those layers of fear more quickly. It's that interpersonal piece of A Course in Miracles that makes it unique. Now, if you are, I don't know if this is a question. What if we're studying alone? I'm not sure what we were talking about when that question was asked, but if we're studying alone and not in a group, and I don't think I'm answering this question in context of when that question was posted, but it's again about all of our relationships, even if they're those casual encounters. It doesn't have to be, you know, a romantic relationship or somebody you live with. It's literally being in a teaching learning situation with strangers, maybe making the choice to not curse somebody out when they cut you off in the car. It can be as simple as that, as being a demonstration of love. And I love a comment here. I write it out on paper at times so I can teach it to myself. I've even spoken into my phone and recorded myself so I could understand it better. That's beautiful. That's, you know, I, even with speaking, I found it's so helpful for me to say things out loud in preparation. I was just doing this because I spoke at the Course in Miracles German Festival, and they had like, they were translating each talk into like four or five different languages while I was speaking. And as you know, I talk very fast. So slowing down, I especially wanted to get comfortable with that. So I was actually saying things out loud to myself, and it was really helpful with just grounding in to the meaning behind the words and to really feel that, you know, that maintaining of that connection with Holy Spirit while speaking. So that could be writing things out, recording in your phone, that's all awesome. Awesome ideas. Well, perfect timing. I thought we might read into the next section, but we're ending right at the end of part two. So next week we will read part three, What Are the Levels of Teaching? Any final comments or questions before we go for the week? All good. All right.
So do you have classes on holidays, or like next week is a holiday weekend?
Yes, ma'am. I'll be here. Whether okay. you all come or not is is up to you, but I will be here. So yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Very good. I love you all. Have a wonderful week. See you in a week.
Bye,
everybody. Thank you.
Thanks. Great class. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Love you
all. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.